Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 83 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. We got a new trailer. We got one new trailer, but the Outlander community as a whole,
got a few.
Meaning the other countries got a few.
I would say the UK.
Okay. The other country that we're speaking of got two more new ones. But we got a new trailer from Outlander Stars. They entitled this one At Long Last. It's good. It's some of the stuff we've already seen. I don't think there was a
shot.
There was a couple of new, like, you know, sound bites that I hadn't heard before. And
it was kind of revisiting things we've seen, like in flashes.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole purpose, and you can see as the title says, At Long Last, is to get us excited about continuing her story. What's coming up?
Yes. And
where does she do?
And on the note of
where
getting
does
us,
she go? Who does she do? Sorry.
No.
We already know that.
And on the same note of them trying to get us excited, yesterday, Meryl posted on Twitter that there are 14 days until Outlander's coming back. And
it kind of freaked me out.
Well,
in a good and a bad way.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Because, I mean, I'm still remembering last October when they were like, see you in April. And we were like, what?
I know.
And then, and now it's like 2 weeks away, but it still feels like a long way away. 2 weeks still feels like a long ways away when it comes to talking about seeing more Outlander. So, I don't know. I'm getting kind of excited again. Excited, nervous. Outlander Stars also released a cute video along the lines of Jimmy Kimmel does this where he has celebrities reading mean tweets. Now, these were not mean tweets, but he has celebrities come on and they'll read tweets that other people have said about them. And then, you know, they have their little reaction. But Outlander Stars has decided to do a version of this where Katrina and Sam are reading tweets that people have tweeted about them and about their characters. And I thought it was super cute. And I think that Outlander Anatomy needs to spend a little time with Sam and show him what a collarbone is.
Or a clavicle.
Or a clavicle.
I mean, he knew, he guessed, but he was questioning in his tone. It was very cute. But besides the content of what they were saying, it was adorable. I hope they do. Here's the thing. The fans, we have, and I know they're not going to go back likely that far. It's too much work. But the fans have been tweeting about the two of these since July of 2013 and September of 2013, respectively. So, matter of fact, I think it was July 5th and September 11th. But anyway,
I don't know how they pared that down to like 6, because
it was only six. Oh my gosh,
it felt like it was. That was me guessing.
There
a number.
Are so
it could
many
been more.
There are so many tweets that they could choose from, right? I mean, right. If they go back, which they're
that's
not
what
going
saying.
To.
How do you just pick that many?
But even if that weren't a problem, which I agree, I would not want to be the person who had to only pick 6 or however many. But what I'm saying is,
there have been some gems over the last year and a half.
Oh, yeah. This was so entertaining. And yes, you have to have them. You have to have a camera. You have to have them all prettified, although it doesn't take that much. They have to be there, granted, in the same place. But as far as the content, all you have to do is prep the Twitter stuff. You got it. Yeah. You just have to choose it. So this is like one of the easiest little videos for them to prep.
Right.
And there's endless content for them to use.
Oh, yeah.
And so this, I would hope, will be done going forth. Now, I'm about to say something. Please do not think that there have been any announcements. There have been no announcements. I am just taking what we've just talked about and extrapolating and going forward. Since we're going to have, and you know, don't beat me with a wet noodle.
I will.
You will. Okay.
Let me go get one.
That's private. So,
whoa.
But once we get the announcements of Roger and Bree, they have not been made yet, but once we get the announcements, I would hope, even if it's like once a month, that this is such, comparatively, an easy thing, and it's content that they already have. People will be tweeting about the people who play Roger and Bree as well. I hope that we get a Jamie and Claire or Katrina and Sam thing like we just did, again, multiple times. And I hope we get one for Roger and Bree, whoever they might be. I think of them sitting together and talking about whatever, even though we will have never seen them in
Well, I think what they need scenes. To do is they need to do mean tweets.
Oh.
With Larry. Leary and like, Blackjack. Larry. With Leary and Blackjack.
Sorry, Nell Hudson, sorry, you've become a man.
Larry.
McKenzie.
No, but I think they should do mean tweets with Blackjack and Leary.
That would be
awesome. I think
awesome.
That would be hilarious.
Stars, if you're listening, which you never know, if you have, you heard it here first from Summer, that would be amazing. Do the same, do the mean tweets, and do have Nell Hudson and Tobias Menzies, or have them in character. That would be even better. But anyway, have them do it about Leary and
Blackjack.
And Blackjack. Oh my goodness, that would be da bomb.
But that is definitely a wig.
Oh, heck yeah. But he looks so great.
He does.
He just embodies that wig. He embodies that costume. I mean, it's the Duke. It's a version of the Duke. I'm not going to lie. In my mind, we haven't heard his voice yet, but the Duke is explained or described as having a high voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give anything away. I mean, who cares about the voice? He is described as having a high voice, but let's just say by certain things that we read, I would have put the Duke as appearing a different way. And maybe that's a stereotype coming from my brain, from little hints that were given. But but he embodies it. He looks amazing.
And we got
another
great shot of Lotta as Gaelis. You know that the show has been off the air. You know that the show has been off the air too long when I've already forgotten how to pronounce their names.
But we're doing the read
along. Good Lord. But she looks stunning. I love all the period costuming. I know we say that all the time, but good Lord. I want one. I want a dresser. Do they have those anymore?
A dresser?
Somebody to dress me.
Oh.
In that outfit. Or any outfit.
Well, it just takes money.
Money. I need more money.
And a will.
All right, I'm going to have to find that. More money.
I've never seen her look bad in any
photo. She looks regal.
She looks very regal, and she looks so... I mean, Katrina is beautiful, always 100%, but she just looks... And that's why I think I like her as... Even though she's not 6 feet tall and blonde and green-eyed, she is a perfect Gaelis. But she also brings this ethereal, like, wood nymph kind of fairy-like attribute to Gaelis in some of the outdoor scenes we've seen. Obviously, we haven't seen some of the stuff that they flashed forward to in snippets of certain trailers.
And lastly, Amazon Prime UK released two new trailers this week, one featuring Claire and one featuring Jamie. So they're, you know, drumming up the excitement. I don't think that the UK needs to be drummed up.
Oh,
I
no.
think that
they have been so ready.
they've been ready for as long as we have.
Oh my gosh.
As long as we have, only they've had to wait.
A lot.
And wait longer. So, as much as we complain about having to wait till April, you know, the UK had to wait till March to even get
the first.
Oh
my goodness. Yeah. The good thing is, when we're all complaining about the Droughtlander 2, as someone called it last night, between season 1 and season 2,
We'll all be together.
Yeah. So, now that, and I'm sure things will still happen because I don't have a list of every country in the world who has it or doesn't have it. I'm sure by the time Outlander Season 1 finishes in the US, UK, in any market that it's already in, I'm sure there are still markets that don't have it. For example, I don't think France has it yet, which is kind of shocking. But...
Does France want it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
However, I'm hoping that by the time Season 2 actually airs here, whatever deals are going to be made can be made so that they can have it kind of like the UK will for the second half, get it a day or at least less than a week after it airs here.
Well,
if a deal's in place, that's a possibility.
Well, then I would like the BBC to take note of this. Because if they're releasing the things a day after we get it, and it's you know, produced by America, I would like for the UK shows to also follow suit and show them on, like, BBC America the day after
they
air
in the UK.
So you don't
have to wait.
So I don't have to wait, like,
for
6 months.
And stuff?
To their credit...
Oh, they're... Yeah.
To their credit, I have not... And I've been watching, you know, Downton, and I've been watching... Doctor Who and Sherlock. they are so good about not spoiling people. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't know if that's just, you know, all of Britain got together and said, hey, shh, let's just keep this to ourselves and not talk about it online.
I got it.
But I am remarkably, I go into these shows and I'm on social media and I'm on all of these, you know, pages and stuff. And I'm remarkably spoiler free when it goes into these, this season of Downton and with the Sherlock episodes. So they're really good at not, you know, blurting it all out. I think we're super bad at that here in America with spoilers.
That's the unfortunate thing is if you want to be spoil free, which I think most of us do, depending on what we're looking at, it's you have to make, unfortunately, the burden's on you. You have to make a concerted effort to stay away. And even if you stay away from certain things, like certain sites and certain whatever, things pop up in your Facebook feed from your friends, or things pop up on Twitter from someone you follow. I mean, there really is, unless you just stay away from social media and the internet, like, 100%, there's, and then still, you may hear it on, like, over the water cooler at work. So, it's very difficult. I get it. It's not an easy job.
And that is announcements for the week.
And now for our interview with Blue Badge Scottish tourist guide, Susan Brown. Okay, Outlanders, we are thrilled with our next guest, Susan Brown, professional expert tour organizer and trip leader, Scottish in Scotland, has an amazing business, and we want to learn from her and also share this information that we're all going to learn together. Susan Brown, welcome to our show.
Hello, thank you. Great to be here.
How are you? It's a nice little bright, or is it still, well, sorry, it's dark over there, isn't it?
We're still good. We've still got a bit of light. It's okay. Another hour's worth of light. It's been a fairly good day today. Yesterday was gorgeous, beautiful and sunny and getting warmer all the time. So it's quite nice to see spring coming on after a long, dark winter.
Absolutely. And I don't mind the winter, but yes, I definitely appreciate spring after having gone through the winter. What were the steps up until you decided to begin your career in travel and in the tourist business?
Well, I've had a long and varied history. I was born and brought up in the hotel environment in the Highlands of Scotland in Pitlochry. And I used to work there during my summers just to earn a bit of pocket money, whether it was on reception or washing the dishes or whatever. And then I went away to university, did a couple of years in France, and as part of that worked in a French vineyard as a tourist guide. I worked in the tourist office in Pitlochry for a couple of summers. Pitlochry is where I'm from in the Highlands of Scotland. And after that, kind of got jobs in whiskey distilleries and things and moved on to the more corporate side of the business, working in supply chain and things like that. But I always had friends that came to Scotland and wanted me to show them around or tell them where to go. And eventually, I've been lucky enough to retrain as a Blue Badge, Scottish Blue Badge tourist guide. That takes 2 years, and you basically kiss goodbye to your friends and family while you're studying, but make some great friends on the course. And I have been working as a Blue Badge tourist guide for just over a year now. And I'm about to give up my salaried full-time employment and be a full-time tourist guide.
Wow, that is exciting and scary and commitment. How is that process, at least in your mind, getting ready to make that jump?
You know, I've always wanted to move back to the Highlands. And it was trying to find a way that would allow me to make enough money, do something I enjoy, and what more could you want than having Scotland as your office and being with people who want to be there because they're all on their holidays and looking to have fun? So it kind of brought lots of different strands of my life together, and I've built a house in the Highlands, which I'm moving back to over the next couple of months.
Wow, we're sold. You sold us already. I was like, are you hiring? where can we retrain? Do they have distance learning courses? Now that you've you're making that transition and you've made the decision and you begin to have clients, build your clientele, what are some things that you like to tell your clients if they come to you, say the average person, maybe the average American, coming to you with no experience whatsoever, and they say, Susan, you have all this experience, we're trusting you, we want you to plan for us the perfect trip to Scotland. Where do you go from there?
you know what? That's the best step, because people are giving you a blank canvas and saying, we want to come to Scotland. What can we do? And it's like, oh, the hardest bit is how do you cut it down?
yep.
So I usually ask people about what are your interests? How much travel time do you want per day? So the Scottish roads aren't quite like the roads you might find in North America, for example. It can take longer to get anywhere, especially if you're out with the main area between Glasgow and Edinburgh, or the main road up to Inverness. And actually, this weekend, there was a road closure up along Loch Ness because there'd been a landslip. The detour was 120 miles.
Oh, my God.
Wow. So, ask about travel time per day. Do people want to stay in the same place for 2-3 nights, or are they happy to move every night? You know, and get a feel for it. Is it going to be a relaxed holiday, or are people wanting to rush around? Do they want to be active? Do they want to see castles? Are they more city, or are they more country-type people? And it gives me an idea of what they're looking for. And I usually go back with an outline itinerary for them, giving them an idea of what they could do, and then adapt it from any feedback that I get from them.
So it seems like while you probably certainly could fully plan something for someone who doesn't want to be as hands-on, they're like, well, I don't know much, I don't know what I want, give me something that would show me the biggest range for here's my budget and here's the time that I have. But you're as hands-on as the clients want you to be. So it can require a lot of communication. So do you work with your clients virtually via email or phone or Skype?
I do quite a lot by email, but I've also Skyped quite a few clients. There's people that I've been offering advice to via some of the Outlander Facebook groups. People will post up questions and I'll throw a few things in, and sometimes you get a private message after that and there's a bit of chat, and there's a few people I've been talking to over the last few months that as they confirm their plans, they'll come back and ask other questions. So there's a fair amount of information, you know, I can just give out fairly easily that I don't charge for, because, you know, Outlander, although it can be a business in Scotland, actually, it was a New Zealand friend that got me into reading the books, and that was where my first love of Outlander came from. So I maybe I'm a little bit more generous to Outlander fans in terms of giving away free stuff rather than some of the other groups that come through.
I was going to say, how many of those, like, first touch emails with them start with, well, are you familiar with the Outlander books?
There are a few, that has to be said. But I've got a whole bunch of colleagues now as well who have been reading the books and watching the series over the internet and stuff. And certainly whenever we're offering tour guides to anyone new, because sometimes people want an itinerary, sometimes they want tour guides, the first bit is they've read at least the first two books, they've seen the first 8 episodes. You know, these guys are as wrapped up in Outlander as many of the fans out there.
So where do your clients come from?
All over the place. Being a Blue Badge Scottish tourist guide, it's not purely Outlander tours that I do. So I can do general tours of Scotland, and I speak French. So most of my May and June this year are wrapped up in French tours. A lot of people from all over France that usually come out with like kind of on a works travel group. It's a big thing that happens in France. I've had people at medical conferences in Glasgow that have come from Poland or Czech Republic. I've had academics from Turkey who want to come and see about Charles Rennie Mackintosh. I've had musicians from one of the universities in America that were on an alumni tour to Ireland and Scotland, so taking them up around the Highlands, and they were playing at different places along the way. I've had Australian DJs who've been over at the Commonwealth Games, and I had a really tough one in July last year at the Commonwealth Games because I had to take some media people on a champagne cruise on Loch Lomond, and then I had to have dinner with them in a Michelin-starred restaurant. That has to be the toughest gig so far.
You have the world's worst job. Drudgery every day, right?
Yeah, what can I say? It's a tough life being a tourist guide. Having to be out and about all the time, you know, it's a great office to have. I recommend it to anybody.
Yeah. And again, your office, your backyard, your front yard, your everything, your habitat, your passion and your expertise is Scotland, which I can't imagine a better one to have for all of that.
Definitely. Wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
So what are some of the most common things travelers to Scotland seem to want to see or learn about?
I think it depends how many times they've been, but most of the groups that I see are usually first-time travellers, and there's kind of a standard triangle that people will do in Scotland. So they'll usually fly into Edinburgh, and there'll be a trip to the castle, go and see the crown jewels of Scotland, the honours of Scotland. They're quite impressive. They were lost for quite a while in the mists of time, and then Sir Walter Scott, the great writer from the 1800s, went on a little investigation and found them and brought them back. So they're displayed in Edinburgh Castle. Palace of Holyrood House in Edinburgh is also very good. That's the Queen's residence in Scotland, in Edinburgh, when she's here. And she comes up and holds a garden party in the summer. And lots of people from Scotland get to go and have tea and cake with her. And in between the two, we have the Royal Mile, which is the old part of Edinburgh, which some of you may well be familiar with from Jamie's adventures as a printer in Edinburgh. So there's some great places all the way along the Royal Mile. And then we've got the rest of Edinburgh itself. So people generally start there, and then they'll work their way up to Inverness, which is probably about 4-hour drive, 3.5 to 4-hour drive from Edinburgh. And you can stop along the way. There are so many places to stop. Up to Inverness, and obviously near Inverness you've got Culloden. On the way up you've got the Highland Folk Museum, which is where the Rent episode was filmed, or part of it anyhow. You've also got Ruthven Barracks, which is quite close to the Highland Folk Museum. And that is where Bonnie Prince Charlie's troops that were left after Culloden came back to meet. So it's got a lot of emotional ties with Scotland's history. And then from Inverness, some people will go to Skye if they have the time. Others will come down Loch Ness, kind of down the left-hand side of the triangle towards Fort William, and have a couple, maybe a night or two nights down near Fort William. And then back along the, almost along the bottom towards Glasgow. Some go to Glasgow, some go through the Trossachs to Stirling, Doon Castle, Castle Leith, and back to Edinburgh. But what I would say is, don't miss out Glasgow. It's an amazing city. And whilst it's not in Outlander, actually the architecture and everything else has great links with America from the kind of the mid-1700s onwards, which is when Glasgow kind of came into its own. And it's quite a city to investigate. Very different to Edinburgh, don't get me wrong, but a fantastic place as well.
Agreed. It's very different from Edinburgh, but it's also ancient, and it's an ancient city.
It is. It's got some very old beginnings. I mean, you can go back to, the kind of 5th to the 9th centuries, but it was very small. Even at the time of Bonnie Prince Charlie, there was only about 14,000 people in Glasgow, and it wasn't until the trade with the New World kicked off that Glasgow really came up into itself and grew and grew and grew and made a lot of money. And, was able to show how much money it is made. So, for example, the City Chambers in George Square, there is only one place, this is like the Town Hall or the City Hall, there's only one place in the world that has more marble than this building, and it's the Vatican.
Oh, my gosh.
So, Glasgow was good at showing its wealth through the 1800s and showing what it was capable of and where it made its money.
I wonder if the touristy spots have changed a lot. I bet that years ago everyone was wanting to go on Braveheart tours, and now they all want to go on Outlander tours.
Yes, certainly. There's more and more people coming for Outlander tours, and I think that's great. It's always great to introduce people to Scotland, however they come here, whether it's Braveheart, Harry Potter, Skyfall, Rob Roy. There's been a number of films over the years, but it's great that more and more people want to come here because Scotland has so much to offer for everybody, whether it's being out, being active, whether it's Outlander, everything that you could want to do.
So what is your favorite thing? You may have already given us a hint, but what is your favorite thing about being an expert tour advisor and travel planner?
Making people smile.
Aww.
I get to indulge my passion for Scotland, and I get to show people what a wonderful place it is and hopefully give them a wish to come back again and again and again. And certainly from some of the tours I had last year, there was a lot of people planning to come back and do more. And even the French tours I had, Scotland has this image of being a very rainy place. And I don't know where people get this idea from, Well, maybe I do, actually. But I had two French tour groups last year, one weekend after the other, and they could not get over how much sunshine we had. And it's like, keep it quiet. Don't tell everyone. We haven't got enough space for everyone to come and visit at the same time. So yeah, the best bit is getting people out and about. And, you know, with small groups, I do a mixture of small private groups that can be up to 7 people. And I do coach work as well with maybe 40, 50 people. But with the smaller groups, you can take them off the beaten track. So I can take them to the picnic spots I used to go to when I was a child. I can take them to the little eateries that are down the end of a single track piece of road that coaches couldn't go down. I can take them to the little fishing boats where you can buy ons directly off the boats rather than seeing it all being sent in big refrigerated lorries all around Europe. So you can have the more local experience with the smaller groups. And it's fantastic. I mean, what else could you want to do?
I can't think of anything. I want to come right now. But again, we're an easy sell. We both have been there and we love it. And I think Summer and I were kind of chatting, or I mean, kind of joking. Don't get me wrong, because we're fortunately and unfortunately we're quite a ways off from this. But you know, it may be something maybe to if we. Save up well and do the research, it might be nice to consider maybe retiring to Scotland one day.
Definitely.
Summer just sighed and went, oh.
Maybe with a little bit of that California sunshine thrown in every now and again.
Well, a little, that's true. Of course, you know, wouldn't mind returning home. But we both spent enough time in Scotland. I was fortunate to be there for a year when I was studying at St. Andrews, that my heart is in Scotland. There's just no way else to put it. You know, I love my family. I am not ashamed to be American at all. I love my country, but I think Scotland is the most beautiful place in the world. And I admit that I haven't seen every place in the world, but I'm very biased. I will not lie.
Well, you'd be welcome anytime. Just let us know.
What are some of the challenges you've faced? And maybe of those, which have surprised you the most?
Challenges. On my French tour, I was trying to find the right word sometimes.
And then
your tour is telling you at the end of your 5-day tour with them that the word you thought was a buzzard was actually a cowpat. That's an interesting one. I didn't understand why they were always laughing at me at the back of the coach. Have I said something fun? And it's very close. It's just where you put the emphasis on the word. So that was a bit of a challenge. So I learned that word pretty quickly. One I alluded to earlier, the road closures. So, you know, some of our detours can be 120 miles, depending on where you are in the Highlands. So that can make life a little bit more challenging if you have a fairly tight time scale that you have on your itinerary from the travel operator. But really, are there any challenges, any major challenges? No, I just look at it as part of the whole life's rich tapestry and the opportunities that we have when people are there. Kind of things that surprise me. We've always got something to learn from the groups that come with us. And people are always able to make connections with Scotland that we didn't know or we hadn't heard of. So I've picked up a lot of information from the French groups, from the American groups, about links that they have with Scotland, whether it be ancestral links, whether it be music links. You know, another key one is geology. We share geology on the west coast of Scotland with the east coast of North America, United States and Canada. We have the same rocks that were just pulled apart hundreds of millions of years ago. But we do get a lot of great linkages that people will come up with when they're on tour, and they'll tell you things and little anecdotes that we can keep and use with future groups as well. So, you know, it's not just about me imparting some knowledge to the groups. It's actually about me learning a lot from the people that come on tour with us and striking up some great friendships as well.
What are your top 5 hints or tips for people wanting to plan their first trip to Scotland?
You know, this was hard getting it down to 5. I started off with a list of about 20. I think I've got it down to 6. I think the first one is don't try to fit too much in. Your first tour is usually an overview of Scotland, and that's like your taster tour. It's your amuse-bouche. So it's something to get you to want to come back again. It does take longer to get between places than you might think. And in the Highlands, we have a fair amount of single-track roads. So that means you've got one road with little passing places at either side, selected distances, and somebody's going to have to pull over to let the other person pass, either in front of you or if you're getting a queue behind you. So it can take longer than you think to get places. What I tend to do is, if I'm planning a tour, I'll plan usually on about 3 stops during the day, and that means that you're not rushing around like a mad thing and you have time to see places properly. So for example, on Monday I went out with one of my colleagues, just a pre-season recce, to go and see some places. We left Edinburgh, we went to Roslyn Chapel and had a good couple of hours at Roslyn Chapel, so Da Vinci Code for those of you that are familiar with that, an absolutely beautiful chapel. We then moved on to, into East Lothian, which is east of Edinburgh, to a place called Dirleton, and went to Dirleton Castle and had about an hour and a bit there. Moved on to North Berwick for lunch, beautiful little boutiques right on the sea, on a sunny day it looks beautiful, and then on to Tantallon Castle, which I think used to be my favourite castle, but has now been usurped by Dirleton. So that was kind of, and back to Edinburgh. And that was leaving Edinburgh about 10 o'clock and getting back into Edinburgh about 4:30 in the afternoon. So 3 things is probably about enough. Fourth thing, if you're coming in July and August, book your accommodation ahead, especially if you're going to the Isle of Skye or any of the islands, because it does get booked up very quickly. And obviously August is festival time in Edinburgh and it can get very expensive, so either book ahead for Edinburgh, or if you don't mind traveling a little bit, book your accommodation outside Edinburgh so it's a bit cheaper during the festival time for you. A key difference, I think, between Scotland and a large part of the rest of the world is that we have the right to roam. What this means is we have an outdoor access code, and it means you can walk through fields, across mountains, without having to ask the permission of the landowner. There are certain rules around, please close the gates behind you, don't leave any rubbish behind you, don't start fires. But actually, it's very liberating to be able to get out and about around Scotland and go and see what's going on. So we have the right to roam. Feel free to use it. It is good. You can go and find a hidden beach that you see on a map by just finding an old pathway through the hills to find it. And probably the last thing I would say is the locals are friendly. Don't be afraid to strike up a conversation in a pub, in a restaurant, in your hotel. And in fact, even in Glasgow, if you stand in the main square, George Square, and you look like you're lost, it won't take more than about 30 seconds for a Glaswegian to come up to you and say, can I help you? So do talk to the locals. They've got a lot of great ideas for places you can go, little hidden gems. And I found a few more on Skye when I was there at the beginning of February by talking to one of the locals and found some new waterfalls to go to that I would never have known about had I not struck up that conversation and found out a bit more.
Those are excellent, and they can be applied to pretty much anything you'd like to plan almost anywhere. I mean, they just seem like good, solid tips about how not to over-engage yourself, over-plan, and to get the most out of your any trip that you're planning.
Definitely, yep.
So what about something new or maybe a little bit different for people who have been to Scotland maybe a dozen times, and they think, look, I've seen it all, but I'm coming back again. What can you help plan for me? Or what can you suggest if you're putting together a package for me that I haven't seen? What can you do for that person?
I think it's about finding out what their interests are and where they've been already, or areas that people have enjoyed the most and maybe would like to go back and do in a bit more depth. That's all part of talking to people and finding out what they want. In terms of places that I think are spectacular and something a little bit different, there is a kayaking trail on the west coast of Scotland, and you can rent kayaks with a guide or without a guide. You could stay out overnight and camp somewhere along the west coast where there really is very few settlements. I think that's something that people could do if you're of the active type. Another one is taking a walk to some of the lost villages, the cleared villages from the late 1700s and early 1800s. In fact, I'm planning on doing one next weekend myself up on the road between Fort William and Glenfinnan. So you could go out and walk and just find some of these places. There's a Crannog in Loch Tay you could go and see. But I think in general, for people that are looking for something, you know, that have been here forever, is get right off the beaten track, maybe go and rent a cottage somewhere. There is a fantastic place called Dún, which is not of Dún Castle Fáin, a different one, which is in Noidart. So you have to get a boat, the resort, the small place run themselves, from Malaig. It's about an hour's boat trip, and it's a fully self-sufficient community that has, I think, four double bedrooms and then one bunkhouse, and they do all the food themselves on there. You can use it as a base to go scuba diving, to go walking, to take photos, and there is no road into this place. It's a fabulous place, but it does get booked up in advance. I've been lucky enough to go twice. And you can also do the 5 mile walk around to the pub at Inverie, should you wish to. So that there's lots of different things people can do. I think for people who think they've seen it all, I'm still exploring, and I'm in my 40s now, and I've lived here most of my life. So there are definitely still corners that I've not yet found. For example, the northeast roundabout, Peterhead, and places like that. So that there's plenty of places still to visit. And I know that Deborah Firth, who is working on one of the Facebook Outlandish Travels groups, she has a B&B down in the southwest of Scotland. And as a tourist guide, that is not an area that we get asked to go to very often. So the southwest is another area worth going to. And you have fabulous castles like Calaverock Castle down there. It's like a triangle. It's an amazing place. So yeah, there's lots of places still to explore.
Now, you touched on this earlier. If you had to give, not exact numbers, but maybe just a guesstimate of proportion or percentage, how many Outlander fans have you had or do you have as clients?
I think it's still a fairly small proportion. A lot of what I do gets booked up in November and December, and it tends to be booked up by the inbound tour operators, so people that are bringing in groups of people from abroad. So in terms of percentage-wise, I think the inquiries are a lot higher from people that are interested in Outlander. And in fact, this year I have been organising the tours for the UK Outlander Gathering in May. So I have four of my colleagues lined up to run the coach tours on those. So I think lots of fun to be had for those that are coming across for that. I would say probably about 60% of my inquiries are people who have questions about what to do in Scotland come from Outlander fans. But a lot of them are saying, I'm getting to come to Scotland because I won't be quiet about Outlander, but I'm coming with somebody that's not an Outlander fan. Can you make sure we've got a balance?
There you go.
Yeah, and also from people speaking to people at the UK Outlander Gathering last year, there were a lot of people that came in from outside the UK who said, I'm here because of Outlander, but not necessarily for Outlander. So people who'd read the books or were very keen in getting to see the show who said, I'm coming over because it's fired my imagination. This is a place I want to go and visit. And yes, I'd like to see some Outlander stuff, but actually I'm also here because of Scotland. So it's quite fun trying to find a balance and planning trips for people where they can get a little bit of Outlander in some of the filming locations, but actually they're getting some of the history and some of the general information about Scotland and the incredible scenery and photo opportunities that are out there. And Fife is obviously a large part of that, and that's an area that you know well, I would say, after a year. And there's been a lot of filming locations in Fife. And I was out again having a look around there last weekend, just seeing how it's looking after the filming. And Curis, which is Cranesmuir's, had a bit of a paint job, taking it back to its original colours, and it looks spectacular. So, you know, people want to go to lots of different places, and I think that the tourism boom from Outlander is only just beginning. You know, there's lots of small companies in Scotland that run Outlander tours. I'm one of many. And it's great to see that small business and shop local is alive and kicking, and that, you know, we can take people to the places they want to go to.
Absolutely. And if it is just booming from people, of course, maybe proportionally or mostly from outside of the UK, now that the UK will be getting Outlander on Amazon Prime, I believe it is, that once it, I think it's the 26th. Hopefully people who live in country are now going to be awoken a bit and want to come see the stuff that's just either in their own country or north of the border.
Certainly, and I know that the UK Outlander community are can't wait until the 26th of March. Viewing party. I think the Outlandish bakers that are based in different parts of Scotland that deliver the goodies to the cast and crew when they're filming are already planning stuff as well. So it'll be great. I think hopefully nobody will want to get in touch with me on the 26th of March because I might be in hibernation that day.
Well, I know that personally, like, because we're going to be going to Scotland in May. And for me, it's like I want to do the Outlander things, but I also just kind of want to find cool places to hang out with locals. That's the rub that I have. It's like, because I want to do everything, let's be honest.
We want everything that you mentioned.
But we've only got, like, a finite amount of time, so it's like trying to find the coolest places and the Outlander stuff, so.
You're going to be busy then.
Oh, my apparently. Gosh. Oh, we knew going into this we'd be busy because, yeah, it's not even funny. It's busy.
Yeah, I think you'll be,
but all enjoyable.
Indeed,
all enjoyable.
You'll be aiming for more than three places a day then by the sounds of it.
Oh, I don't know. If I find one really cool place, I'll stay there all day.
Well, I think if you head out to Rannoch looking for Craignadun, I think you might spend a whole day there looking for it because Rannoch is... It's not far from the main roads and stuff. It's about an hour from the main roads. But actually, it's the middle of nowhere. And there's a small village, and it's beautiful, but it is a more difficult place to go. But certainly, for those that have the time, I would suggest a trip out to Rannoch looking for Craignadun is a great idea. Although, don't go looking for the stones, because they're not there. They were added for filming. But even just seeing the views from where it was, you'll have a great time.
I think that's something we talked about. I think we do look forward to seeing, Rannoch Moor?
Well, it's Rannoch Moor and also Loch Rannoch, so you can...
There is Loch Rannoch.
You can tackle it from either end.
We know it's tied to a budget, a time frame, the time of year, etc. But what kinds of locations or experiences do you offer fans of the Outlander books and TV series?
I think the locations are the fun ones. You know, you can't come to Scotland and not go to Doon Castle. And if you're coming with a non-Outlander fan, just mention the words Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That should keep everybody happy. And then certainly at Doon Castle, you can get a feel for what it was like. You can take a walk and see some of the views up towards the castle that were used in the film. Cúras, probably one of my favourite places, and it dates back to kind of the 15th, 16th centuries. It's got some beautiful buildings. The herb garden at the back of the palace there is spectacular, again used for Clare's herb garden. There is a lovely church up on the hill, not the Black Kirk, but there's a church up the top of the hill in Cúras. You have to walk up a really narrow street with some beautiful doorways in it. And then not far from there you've got the Black Kirk. Now, the Black Kirk is actually called the West Kirk, and it's probably just short of a mile down a farm track that has fairly deep ruts in it. I have grounded my car once or twice going along there. So possibly if you're feeling reasonably fit, it's a fairly flat track, probably best to leave your car at the road end and then walk along, and you can go up to the Black Kirk. Other places that I would take, Aberdour. I actually went to Aberdour for the first time last weekend. It wasn't somewhere I'd had a chance to get to since I'd seen it in some of the episodes, or seen it was coming up in the episodes. But it's a lovely little castle, and you can get there by train as well, so you don't have to have a car or take a tour. You can get there by train. Falkland, which is where they filmed the kind of 1940s Inverness, you can go and be Jamie's ghost looking up at the window of Mrs. Beard's B&B. Falkland is a lovely little place, and it has its own palace that is steeped in history dating back to Mary Queen of Scots, who installed one of the first real tennis courts there. And it's not like tennis you have today. It's real tennis, it's against a wall and stuff, but it's well worth a visit. Again, there's so many places worth a visit. You know, you've got me on my favorite subject again. So you could go there. Highland Folk Museum is up on the road towards Inverness, about just over halfway between Edinburgh and Inverness. And it is run by donations, really. So people are asked to put in some money for what you think it's worth, and it's great to see that some of these small local museums are still able to keep going, and the filming's very much helping to do that. And hopefully with the influx of visitors they'll get this year after the episodes went out last year, and obviously in the UK shortly, it will get a lot more visitors and have a lot more money to reinvest and to build it up a bit further. And then obviously Culloden. You can't come on the Outlander tour and not go to Culloden. This place is haunting. It is beautiful. It is emotional. It has so much history wrapped up in it. And from there you can walk to Clava Cairns, which some say has been the inspiration for Craignadun, and you go through the split stone there. If you have a slightly higher budget, I would suggest you maybe follow in Diana's footsteps and maybe go for afternoon tea at Culloden House, which is not far from there. And it's also where Bonnie Prince Charlie stayed the night before the Battle of Culloden, and the Duke of Cumberland stayed there not long after it. So the owner of the house kind of was host to both sides of the conflict at that point in time. So those are some of the key locations that we have for Outlander. There's other places. Near Edinburgh, you've got Preston Mill of the Pink Pants fame, which I think we'll see in the not-too-distant future. Preston Mill has a water mill. Need I say any more?
No.
And then off the beaten track, off the Outlander track, you've got Skye. You cannot come to Scotland and not see Skye. The whole of the West Coast is probably my favourite part of the whole of Scotland. If you have a longer time, I would love to take you to Lewis and Harris, the most amazing islands with beaches to die for and nobody on them. Okay, mm-hmm. It's maybe only about 15 to 25 degrees Celsius, and the water will be a little bit colder than that, but it's all part of the experience. You can go for a wee dip in the cold North Atlantic. So there's just so many places to take you. But those are some of the places I would suggest to people and look to take them when they're on a tour. Again, depending on how long you have, but some amazing places. And there are also new activities starting up. So there's a company called Mary's Meanders based in Linlithgow. They're starting to do a kind of Jacobite food and music night in Linlithgow. So that should be quite interesting to see how that comes on. That's a new venture for this year. And there's also reenactors across the country who want to come in and do things for groups and are, you know, can be there. You've got the band Clanadonia, who have the music at the beginning of the first episode when they're going after the ambush by the Redcoats. That's the song's called Hamster Heat. And Clanadonia actually play in the streets of Glasgow about three times a week through the summer for free. So you can go and listen to them in the street. And then the other one, obviously, is Gilibrija, who is the bard, Gwilym the Bard, in the episodes as well. He's based round about Glasgow. He's a Gaelic teacher and also, obviously, a singer. And Gilibrija and I work together to where we have a requirement by a group to bring him in, and he'll sing for them as well. So lots of different opportunities for things, whether it's a full-on Outlander immersion or whether it's maybe Outlander light.
Nice. You mentioned the Culloden House, tea at the Culloden House. What is that? Is that really, really expensive? Like, what would it cost to have a high tea at the Culloden House?
Culloden House is probably one of your upper-end hotels that we have in Scotland, and you're probably looking about £30 a head for afternoon tea, but you don't need to have lunch, you don't need to have dinner, because you'll have your sandwiches, your scones, your cakes, your pastries, and it'll keep you fed all day.
Well, that definitely seems like something we may need to look into, if we can. I mean, if it's a special, I mean, it's something, it's an experience.
You're definitely
paying for the experience, not just, you know, for the teas and cakes, but that's just a bonus.
Exactly.
So what are your favorite filming locations?
I think Cooris is probably my favorite place, because you can go and explore the little streets in behind. There's a little cafe called Biscuits that does a great range of cakes, including lots of gluten-free cakes for those that are needing to follow that kind of regime. But Cooris is just a lovely little place. It's on the Firth of Forth. And on a good day, you can see across to Blackness Castle, which was used in the kind of the flogging scene where Jamie's being flogged. So again, Blackness Castle, another great place as well. And it's not very well known yet, so you're going to have it more to yourself. And not far from Blackness, you've got Midhope, which is Lallybroch. So there's just so many little tie-ins you can fit things together. But I think probably Cooris and Blackness are probably my favourite places.
I would love to go to, if we could make it to Cooris.
It's spelled C-U-L-R-O-S-S, Cooris.
I'm wondering if the right to roam laws are going to change once all the Americans start coming over and annoying you.
I'm sure they won't. We've had centuries of Scots tramping all over these hills and these places. I don't think a few more Americans are going to make any difference. We look forward to seeing you.
Are there any particular scenes, places, and or moments from the books or the Starz production which people who go on Outlander-themed tours or trips are keen to recreate or experience?
I would say Jamie's ghost, looking up at Mrs. Baird's B&B in Inverness. That's a key one that a lot of people do, and I've certainly seen a huge amount of photos as well on the Facebook groups when people have been doing that. I think the Black Kirk, there's been quite a few more people doing the Black Kirk with it with their cape on, a bit like Claire does. Those are probably the two main ones at the minute. I think we'll see more this summer because it's probably this year we're really going to hit the boom of the Outlander tourism. Last year, people who are fans of the books have been coming for years. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But it's not been huge. I think with the publicity that has followed the series and people are getting to see the kind of places they can go, more and more people are being inquiring about coming this year or are saving up to come next year into 2016. So I think we'll get more of an idea once we've had a bit more tourism coming through that is pure Outlander tourism.
So you've mentioned some of the more popular locations or experiences that are with the fans. Yeah. What are the places that maybe don't receive as much fan interest that you would like to maybe receive more or to take people to?
I think the Highland Folk Museum is one because it supports a local community and it keeps the history alive. There are other kind of folk museums related to that. There's one down in Argyll, which is very close to Agaf, the Gaelic consultant on Outlander. It's close to his heart, which is down near Inverary. So maybe not specifically in the book or on the show, but related to the cast and crew. So I think Argyll is a place where it would be lovely to see more people going down to. And near there's a huge area of standing stones called Kilmartin Glen, and it's in key Agaf country. He's huge on Argyll in that area. And it might help to bring back more of the Gaelic language. So I think people who are learning some Gaelic, keep going with it. It wasn't something I got to do in school. It's something I've picked up since and still very much a beginner. But one of the places, you know, that it would be great to see some more visitors coming to and taking it from there. Other places in the series, there's a lot of people asking about Cocklemain Rock. Unfortunately, that's CGI. It's a real place, unfortunately. And there's a few places I'm still trying to work out where it is. So when they're driving along in their car in the first day, I've been trying to work out which part of the country that's in. I've got some ideas, but I think I might have to get out and about and look a little bit harder myself.
So to what extent do people want to visit places specifically featured in the book or series compared with places that provide historical context to events in the series?
I think there's a real mix. I think it depends what kind of tour people are coming on. If they're coming with their partners or their families, it tends to be a bit of a mix. If they're coming on pure Outlander tours, I think it tends to be a lot of the Outlander places, but with a lot of the history thrown into it. Obviously, you've got the likes of Inverness Tours and Hugh, who has a huge amount of knowledge around about Culloden and what happened around about there. So he's able to weave a lot of history into it. A lot of people want to go to Éilean Donnan Castle, which is on the way to Skye, which actually was reconstructed in the early 1900s. But for those of you who have seen maybe Highlander, that fabulous 80s film, it's the big castle with the bridge leading to the mainland with the arches. And it's also been in a few other films as well. A lot of people want to go there to see the places as well as experience the Outlander stuff in between. So how much, again, it's a lot of it, we'll find out a lot more this year when there's a lot more people coming in, but there are a lot of people coming on their own who want to sign up to Outlander, specific Outlander tours, and I think that's great because I think it's opening up travel to a different group of people who might not have had the courage to come and do it before they became part of the Outlander community.
So two quick questions. Do you offer tour services for school groups? Most likely that would be local Scottish school children and or students, uni students.
There tends to be more tours with university students. A lot of the work of tourist guides in Scotland comes through other organisations. So we're all self-employed and you work for a variety of different companies. So it depends on what kind of business they have coming in. But yes, we have university groups that are over maybe on language schools that will take out for a day or a couple of days. There are also kind of more mature students as well that come across. So alumni associations, specifically from the US, I had them last year, and we were doing day tours out of Stirling to different places. So that, and for the first time ever, I had an American group where I only had one out of 20 people that was an Outlander fan. So we sat together quite a lot at lunch and stuff and spoke Outlander. But generally, you will find more so with the American groups that come across, there's a lot of Outlander fans in there, and it seems to work for all ages. So we'll take whatever group wants to come over and find out what they want to see in Scotland and tell them more about it and take them to those places.
So what's the longest tour that you've ever led? And did you find that you were running out of things to do?
Our training is very good. We never run out of things to do.
That's great.
We have lots of stories, and we build them up all the time as well. I mean, you know, most of my spare time is taken up reading about characters in Scottish history or different places or trying to get out to places I've not been to yet. My longest tour so far has been 8 days, but this year I have 5 10-day tours with Odyssey Unlimited, an American travel operator. So that's going to be fun because we're going to get to go to some places that I've been to, but I don't know in depth like some of the other ones. So it's a bit of an adventure for me as well as it is for the guests. And the tour operator is very keen that we give them exclusive experiences and take them to do different things. So the adventure is all part of it, which will be great fun. I think the hardest bit actually is going to have enough clothes and being able to get my washing done in time to get out on the next 10-day tour.
What type of dining does Scotland offer? And can all diets with planning be catered to?
What type of dining? We've got everything. What do you want? The more mainstream things, we're very good on vegetarian. Meat eaters are well catered for. The steaks are fantastic. And we have great lamb. We have great pork. Fish, we have fabulous seafood. And if you're on the west coast of Scotland, there are some amazing eateries from little like crab shacks up to pub food that is like a pot of langoustines, so like large kind of prawns type thing. We have mussels, we have scallops. You can dive for your own scallops off the west coast if you know where to go. You can take the mussels off the rocks if you're keen on foraging for yourself. Gluten-free. Yeah, I know exactly.
That's committed.
I'm telling you, I've been diving for scallops. I was diving and then half eaten scallops. Oh. I came up with pockets in my jacket that were absolutely filled with scallops. It was amazing. We ate scallops for 3 days solid.
Oh, wow. Can you mentioning the scuba diving, can you qualify on a trip as well?
You can. You can qualify. In Scotland, you're probably better to be a dry suit diver. Or you might get cold very quickly if you're in a wetsuit. I learned how to dive in Scotland. Which I think makes it very easy for me when I go to warm waters to go diving, because I'm not carrying half the kit I'm used to. So I'm ready in 2 minutes flat. The diving here is spectacular, but you sometimes have to be a little bit more committed because it could be snowing when you go into the water, or it mm-hmm. could be raining hard when you come out the water. But you're wet anyhow, so what difference does it make?
That is true. If someone were coming over for a trip and they wanted to qualify while there, how much would that kind of mini package be, and how many days, and are there a lot of places where that is possible?
There are different places you can go to qualify. The one that I know the best is where I did a lot of my training. It's a place called Puffin, Puffin Dive Center. It's near Oban, and you can do a residential course with them. And I think it takes about 5 days or something. It's been a while since I qualified, though, so I couldn't really tell you about pricing. So there's places in Edinburgh and Glasgow where you can do the classroom element and you can do the basic skills in a pool, and then you go for your open water dive somewhere out on the coast. For that, up in Orkney and Shetland, you've got fabulous diving at Scapa Flow. Now, I've only ever been with operators as a qualified person, but you must be able to learn up there. But there are a variety of operators where you can go and learn. And as I say, some of the diving is world class. So yeah, lots of opportunities.
Okay, and also related to what you said earlier about the coasts and the weather and a little bit of the diving, correct me if I'm wrong, but did I read correctly years ago that there's a tremendous, the jet stream that comes through down from the Gulf all the way up past the East Coast and around, comes up and tips and turns around the coast of Scotland, is that correct?
Yeah, the jet stream's more on the west coast, and we have palm trees.
Yes.
So it looks a bit like California at times. We have palm trees. Mm. It's a milder climate generally all year round. It can be a lot warmer in the summer, and it just the jet stream quite often will move up or move down depending on the season. And if we get lucky, it's in the right place, and we get the highs that are meant for England and for Europe, which means Scotland. Well, I say it gets a lot warmer. It's a lot warmer for Scotland, but maybe not in comparison to other places.
What would be a general idea of costs associated with food, travel, and accommodation, understanding that it's going to be different depending on the length of time and someone's budget, etc.?
Okay, the costs of traveling. Petrol or diesel is a lot more expensive than it is in the States. At the minute, it's just short of £1.10 a litre. Now, it's been going up about a penny a week for about the last 8 weeks because it was only about £1.03 at the beginning of the year. It's down from what it was last year. Last year, I think it hit a high of about £1.30 per litre. And I know that some of our visitors from the States spent as much on fuel as they did on car hire. So it was fairly expensive. So budget a lot more for fuel when you're here. A tank of gas will probably cost you somewhere between £50 and £60. And depending on how good your vehicle is, you'll get about 400 miles, maybe 450 out of that. When you're up in the West Coast, fuel is a lot more expensive. So the prices I've been giving you are based on kind of Glasgow, Edinburgh prices. But you can pay up to 10 pence per litre more if you're up in Skye or up in the Northwest Highlands, because it costs a lot more to get it up there. Accommodation, you're looking at anywhere between £60 and £120 on average per night for a room. Sometimes sometimes breakfast included, sometimes it's not. It depends who you book with. On the islands, you're looking, certainly Lewis and Harris, you're looking at about £100 a night per room, bed and breakfast, £100, £120. It is a lot more expensive, but they have a lot shorter season and there's a lot less availability of accommodation. Food, you're looking at about £6 to £9 for an entree, and then about £12 to £20 for a main course. And pudding, so those of you with a sweet tooth, you're probably looking at about £6 to £8 for a pudding. So, you know, sticky toffee pudding or ice cream or cheesecake or any of our things for those that have a sweet tooth. And a cheese board, you know, for your dessert is usually about £6 to £8 as well. So that's your accommodation, your food, your fuel. In terms of other things, tipping, what we like to say is do as you would do at home, you'll never go wrong. We don't tend to tip somebody that's just giving you a drink in a bar, but if you're having food, we would tip. taxi, I would usually leave, you know, I would usually round it up to the nearest pound, or, you know, if it was £6.80, I'd probably say £7.50 or something, so I'll give a little bit more in a taxi. But other than that, yeah, do, you know, think about how you would do it at home, and you won't go wrong.
So what are some of your upcoming projects that you can tell us about, other than your big one, which is going whole hog into your business?
Well, indeed. Well, one of the main ones is the four guides for the UK Outlander Gathering in May. So it's ensuring that we've got the programme that fits with what the organisers are looking for. So I've been working very closely with Lisa Lyle, who's one of the main organisers in the group there. So they've been doing a stunning job. And making sure that we've got timings that fit for those, that we know how many people are going to be going on each coach, because we've got three different pickups or start points, although they all end up in the same place at Crieff Hydro. But they're doing it all in a different order, and we're trying to help organise lunches for people so they've got a lunch with them. Because doing three sites, starting at 9 o'clock and aiming to be back at the hotel for 5 o'clock is a little bit of a challenge. So that's quite a good one. And incorporating all the fun elements that you would want in an Outlander Gathering tour. So, you know, lots of traditional songs from Scotland that we'll be teaching people, like "You Canny Shove Your Granny Off a Bus." Means please do not throw your grandmother off a moving bus. There's quite a good song about that. There's a song about a jilly piece, so a sandwich made with jam in it, and throwing it out the top floor, and which way is it going to land up? So there's some quite good traditional songs, and I'm sure there'll be some traditional Scottish sweets getting thrown around the coach as well. So that's one of the major ones. Other ones, I've been doing a couple of itineraries for people that are looking to do their own self-drive tour of Scotland, taking in the Outlander locations. And some of them are based in the one place for pretty much all nights except the last night. So taking them slightly off the Outlander beaten track, but to some great places where they can see puffins, where they can get that fresh local seafood up near Kyleskew, if anyone's looking up to go up the northwest. There's a beautiful beach as well at Achmelvick, so I've been trying to get that into their itinerary. And then my other tours is just preparing for some of my French language tours that are doing Edinburgh, Fife, so St Andrews, which you guys will know well, Falklands, that's another stopping point, so maybe I'll be able to try and convert some of these French people onto the Outlander theme as well, and up to Inverness and round from there. North of Inverness, I'm going up to Brora and the Pictish Trail, and I've got some tours this year going to Cawdor Castle of Macbeth fame. So I've not actually been to Cawdor before, so at the beginning of May I'm going to take a trip up and go and have a look around Cawdor myself before I take some people up there. So some great places and some great projects. It's just lovely to know that people are coming to Scotland and they're going to be happy and smiley and they're on their holidays. So I get to make sure that I've got everything lined up to make it the best tour for them that I can make it.
So basically you're saying you have nothing planned whatsoever. Right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Wow, you seem like you're already, this makes me not tired, but wow, you are a busy lady.
Well, we tend to be busy on tour from mid to late March through to the end of October. You then take a bit of November off just to chill out and have a holiday and catch up on the paperwork and the washing. And then by January, you've already started planning all the tours that we're going to do to different places to get our knowledge more up to speed or go to places we haven't been before. So January to March tends to be busy in terms of reading lots of extra books around different subjects, researching places, going to visit places. We did a three-day Sky tour in February with 19 guides that I work with more closely and Eyes on Scotland, and we all took a bit of turn in doing the research for that. So I think next year we're talking about either Isla and Jura, so a little bit of whisky going on there, or maybe heading up to Shetland and Orkney and spending more time up there, because we do get some tours that we take from Edinburgh or Glasgow, and it can be two-week tours, and we end up in Orkney and Shetland. And although I've been up there a couple of times for diving and I've seen one of the stone circles, I've not spent enough time up there actually going around the places. So you know, yes, we keep very busy.
Oh my goodness. Well, I know that we're so excited for our trip and can't wait to meet you, if at all possible, and just see anything and everything we can possibly fit in within reason to that, to our window of time there. We are just, this speaking with you has made us even more excited.
I'm sure we will catch up, definitely.
Excellent. So how can our listeners get a hold of you to begin a conversation about planning their own trip to Scotland? What's your basic contact information?
Okay, so to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me on Skype. My name on Skype is Susie Q Scotland, or you can drop me an email. My email is scotlandyourway, all one word, @btinternet.com. Or if you want, I work with a group of fantastic guys that I trained with for 2 years, and you can get hold of us at Eyes on Scotland. So if you just Google Eyes on Scotland, you'll find us. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and we have our own website as well. And we'd be delighted to help anyone that's thinking about planning a trip to Scotland. And if you happen to be on some of the Outlander forums, like the Outlandish UK, UK Outlander Gathering, obviously via the podcast, you know, I'd love to get in touch with Outlander fans and help you out with your plans for your trips to Scotland.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Susan Brown, for your time on a, it seems like one of the busier times of year for you on the educational part of your year and in the heavy prep side. Thank you so much for giving us some of your precious time, and we can't wait to speak with you again. Maybe catch up after the series and have you back in a few months, if you can get away, to talk more about how your season has gone thus far and help people who are maybe getting a little bit later start on planning their trip.
That would be fantastic. I look forward to catching up with you.
Great. Well, thank you. Again, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
We'd like to thank Susan Brown for speaking with us. And that wraps up another episode of the Outlander podcast. We welcome you back next week when we have even more goodies in store before the official end of Droughtlander. As always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous audio host, Audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/Outlander Pod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Outlander Pod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Outlander Pod, or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
Dreamt it last night that my young